Welcome to part two of our review of the 1972 Francis Ford Coppola classic Godfather. If you are just joining us, we've already issued spoilers alerts for our previous episode. We're not going to do it again. We're just going to say, if you haven't watched episode part one of our review, definitely go back and watch that before entering part two. And if you are with us for part two and you're happy to go on, it is going to be spoilerific. So, welcome to our next section of The Godfather, beginning now.
With Vito's firstborn Sonny. Right.
Salotto, don't you know?
Fuck,
two Z's.
Salotto. What's that next word even mean? What does that even mean? No, I'm joking.
What, precious?
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 Sedgewood?
Very good. With Vito's firstborn Sonny now in command, Salotto presses Hagen to persuade Sonny to accept the narcotics deal. Vito survives the shooting and is visited in hospital by Michael, who finds him unprotected after NYPD officers on Salotto's payroll cleared out Vito's guards. Michael thwarts the attempt on his father's life, but is beaten by corrupt police captain Mark McCluskey. After an attempted hit at the hospital, Sonny retaliates with a hit on Bruno Tattaglia. Salotto and McCluskey request to meet Michael and settle the dispute. Michael feigns interest and agrees to meet, but hatches a plan with Sonny and Corleone Capo Clemenza to kill them and go into hiding. Michael meets Salotto and McCluskey at the Bronx restaurant after receiving a handgun planted in the bathroom by Clemenza, shoots both men dead.
Gospel, what can I say? That scene grips me. You know when Enzo enters and before we realise who he is, I was like still on the edge of my... See, I'm like, this is another hit on the Don.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's for me, it's you see, you start seeing like Michael's potential, in my opinion. He just understands and he's just gotten, it's like, shit, yeah, like this, in this situation, fair enough, obviously he's military trained, but even in this situation, he's like, yeah, you can really see what, His clear thinking and how he sees a situation, sees a problem, sees what the outcome, sees what he needs to do.
100% agree.
It's brilliant. You start seeing the Don.
He marshals the shit so well.
Absolutely. Absolutely that. And doesn't take, like, even when that nurse, who's right, it's like, you can't be here, blah, blah, blah. And he's just like, no, don't you understand the situation? Yeah. You understand, right? Okay, cool. So this is what's going to happen.
Yeah. He thinks on his feet. Yeah.
Yeah, very much so.
He tries the phones, he gets the nurse to move rooms, he gets Enzo to act like an enforcer, who I actually really feel sorry for. It looked like he was about to have a heart attack.
Man, Enzo gets the Avengers Award for me. He showed up, stayed, turned up, and I was just like, yeah. Although he did volunteer his efforts and then shat himself, so I was like,
yeah.
I stay for your father. Okay, cool.
The baker.
It does throw you though. Where it's like, I'll do it. Whatever you need, I'll help you. It's like, right, pretend you've got a gun and we're going to go stand outside because a bunch of guys are going to show up. And you're like, oh, when I said anything.
And then wait.
Go into a gunfight without a gun. Kind of pushing the lines a little bit.
It's so tremendous. What did he expect? He's like, he said some bad men are coming. He's like, I stay for your father. Yeah. What do you think we're going to do? Fucking have a bake-off? He's like, what the fuck?
Mary Berry shows up.
Absolutely. He's like, fucking have this. Italy versus UK, go.
Shit, man. Anton, you're absolutely correct, right? Like, what would Sonny have done in that situation? Or Fredo? Like, Sonny would have got himself killed.
Sonny would have probably killed Enzo. And then be like, oh, fuck, sorry, mate.
Fredo would have jumped out the window.
Absolutely.
And then cried. And let Vito get popped.
Absolutely.
It just feels like it's...
Fredo would have walked in. She's like, sorry, no visitors. We're closed. He's like, oh, okay, I'll leave.
Yeah, ladies. Like, I tried to leave.
It's a shame I can't stay.
Yeah. It feels like it's an abandoned building as opposed to a hospital.
Yeah, but I think the whole feel was the fact that, you know, Michael got
the private one.
And there was no one else there. Yeah. That was the point.
It shows how vulnerable the Corleones are at that moment and how isolated Michael must feel.
Absolutely.
It's very powerful. It's indescribable, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we spent the first part of the film, like, you know, bigging these guys up as the ultimate crime family. But at this moment, they couldn't be more vulnerable. Like, they are as vulnerable as you or me.
Yeah, yeah. It's so true. It's so true.
But, the film doesn't even rest on its laurels here, right? It keeps adding layers and layers, and it's difficult kind of not to get lost in it, because I understand why people find the film like borderline frustrating, I have to say, because suddenly you throw in corrupt police officials and it adds a whole new dynamic to the already hard to digest five family mafia war.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, it's one of those things though where it's and we'll talk about it in a later bit, because it's specifically that after the time skip, and the time skips themselves are something else to talk about, because like I said, man, this film jumps. Like, yo, this film moves. You know what I'm saying? But I think it's just that other element, right? Like, it's just, I mean, for me, it kind of makes sense, because we have politicians that are basically in Corleone's pocket. So it's like, we understand that. Why wouldn't there be cops in someone else's pocket? It's just the way of the world, unfortunately. But again, it's also that romanticization of the mafia in general, right? Because for us, in terms of the compass of good, for us, it's the Corleones. Despite this, like, world and everything that they resolve and they reside in, it's like, it's all bullshit. Let's face it, everyone's evil in this. You're fucking mafia and you're fucking corrupt cops and you're corrupt politicians. But for us, in terms of that world, at least we've got the good guys and they're the Corleones. Do you know what I mean? And that's what they want us to believe. If that they're even a little bit hard up by the man, you know, by the institution, when it turns out really, nah, they're just fucking people over as well, because let's face it, they're the mafia.
Well, the thing is, the mafia would use the excuse that everyone's corrupted.
Absolutely. Or
corruptible. So who's the judge of our actions?
Yeah.
One of my favourite quotes...
Go ahead. Okay. No, do your quote.
I was saying one of my... it's a favourite quote because of how true it is, not because I love the sentiment, but William A. Clarke said, "I never bought a man who wasn't for sale."
Yeah.
It's like a really famous quote. It's basically saying, like, what if every man has his price, then what have I done wrong?
Exactly. Exactly that.
The point was... Oh, shit, what was I going to say?
I knew I should have let you go first.
I just want to point out that with the police chief, the scary part is some of the other cops that are around him don't even seem to be on it, where they're like, he's a war hero. He ain't done anything wrong. He's like, arrest him. And they're like, really? You know, like, there's resistance from his own police force. It just
hold him up, and then he just sucks.
Exactly.
Like, what the what?
It's just like,
do you know, I've just realised we were watching the new Wonka yesterday, and it's like the same dynamic, except it's a chocolate cartel.
All right.
There's literally corrupt police officials, and they're just like, keep giving them more chocolate. He's like, I can't do this. It's so corrupt. They're like, we'll have another bar. He's like, maybe I could. He's like, that's actually a really good film.
Is it? The one with Timothée Chalamet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good check out.
Yeah. Better than that piece of shit from 2005. God damn anyone who worked on that. McCluskey, or the other colourful name that you called him, is an example of a character that is as corrupt as they come. And they see corruption as natural. It's like as natural as wearing the badge or carrying a gun.
Yeah,
it doesn't even think there's anything particularly wrong with it. It's just like the natural order of things. And fucking hell, does that remind me of Boris Johnson now that I think about it?
Oh my God. Yeah.
But it's true. It's like, this is true corruption, like pure unadulterated primordial corruption, where they're like, it's not corruption because this is natural. I am paid to do what other people would rather me do. Sorry, not sorry.
I suppose, yeah. Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah. Because as you say, there are all those people around him. And he's so unabashed. He's like, right now I'm blatantly, nakedly showing my corruption and showing my disregard for due process, for the law, for impartiality.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that.
Seemed like he's annoyed that Michael screwed up the assassination. Mm. It's like, oh.
I mean, the restaurant scene's probably in the top three scenes of the film, I reckon.
That's the scene that literally got Coppola, they're like free reign, as in like it got the studio people off his back. After they saw that scene, they were like, okay, I think, yeah, he knows what he's doing. Let's just shut up now.
Well, even though he chose to use the whole scene where Michael and Slotso are speaking Italian,
yep,
and it isn't translated.
Yep.
I love
that. What was the fucking reason for that, though?
Oh, I loved it.
That was purely... if Ian, you go, because I know you know the answer to that.
Well, for me, it was just... It shows you Michael's thinking and intent. Like, it at that point, it didn't matter what Slotso was saying. It was all Michael and just in his own head because he knew what he was going to do. And I interpreted that as that it didn't matter what Slotso said. There wasn't anything. Translating it didn't mean anything because the words were empty. This scene was all about Michael. So,
even the part after he comes back from the toilet and he sat down, did you notice, like, while he sat there, he's very uncomfortable, right? And you can tell he's uncomfortable. And what they do is, while Salazzo's talking, they actually turn Salazzo down and they turn the car and the trains and everything in the background up, because it gets to the point where it's like, it doesn't matter what this guy's saying. He's like, I need to kill him and I need to do it now. And it's very much, it puts you smack bang into it where you feel what's happening as opposed to watch it. That makes sense. And I think that was the big thing. Because literally, it's at the point where I was like, I'm gonna have to fucking shoot him. And like I said, while you're thinking of that, you're not gonna be listening to what the guy says. It doesn't matter. He could be speaking Arabic. It doesn't matter. So I think that was the main thing, the main reason for that.
Yeah.
The scene, and apologies for getting on my soapbox again.
No worries.
But this scene is a textbook example of when you, as a writer and as a director, you can choose one of two ways to play a scene like this, either tension or shock.
Yeah.
Right? So tension is when we see someone put a bomb under a table.
Yeah.
And then two people sit to have lunch.
Yeah.
Shock is when two people are just sitting at a table and a bomb goes off.
Yeah.
So immediately, so much tension, the audience knows something that the characters do not. And this is born from The Godfather and this restaurant scene, right?
Yeah,
the tension is that we know there's a gun. Is he going to be able to get it?
Yeah.
Is it really there?
Yeah.
Will they let him go to the bathroom?
Exactly.
If he just pulls out a gun and shoots them, it's like, oh shit, that's shock. But the scene was better with the tension.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Despite a clampdown by the authorities for the killing of a police captain, the five families erupt into open warfare. Michael takes refuge in Sicily, and Fredo, Vito's second son, is sheltered by Mo Green in Las Vegas. Sonny publicly attacks and threatens Carlo for physically abusing Connie. When he abuses her again, Sonny speeds to the home but is ambushed and murdered by gangsters at a highway toll booth. In Sicily, Michael meets and marries a local woman, Apollonia, but she is killed shortly thereafter by a car bomb intended for him. So, the bit that I loved is immediately after the murders and he runs out the restaurant, is I love the little segue we get where it's all the newspaper scenes and just sort of melts into the war.
Go into the mattresses, as they say.
Yeah.
I like that. I do really like that saying, and it's funny you understood that. I actually looked that up as to where that what came from as well, specifically.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. So in 1530, basically the combined troops of Charles V and Medici Pope Clement VII lay siege to Florence, and the bell tower of San Miniato al Monte was part of the defences. Michelangelo Buonarroti, was put in charge of defending the city. He used the ploy of hanging mattresses on the outside of the tower to minimise damage from cannon fire. So that was like the first thing, right? The mattresses. Then second, which is a little bit more relevant, in times of siege or warfare, Italian families would vacate their homes and flee to safe areas. The family would need to bring in mattresses to their new location while their original homes were considered dangerous. So the funny thing is, with the mafia stuff, it was almost the other way flipped, where because they were going to war, the guys would leave their homes and take their mattresses to wherever they'd be staying, so that obviously the danger was with them and not with their families.
Right.
I could have sworn. I honestly thought that was made up for the film or the book.
Nah, that's what I said. Because I've heard that before, going to the mattresses. And I was just like, oh, crap, yeah, I'm actually going to look that up. And that, those are the references.
I'm throwing out my first bollocks card.
Ooh.
Oh.
Okay. I'm sorry, but I think we discussed it last time. There's a part where Sonny obviously beats up the husband of his sister. And yep. He throws a punch, and it misses by about 3 inches.
Yep. So here's the funny thing, right? Do you know what I was going to say? Because I remember you said, I knew that was going to be the bit. I think that was potentially the bit that Ian was going to talk about as well. But the funny thing is, for me, right, I know it's ridiculous, and it's like, you can see that it clearly isn't there, and it's just clearly not, it's just right, it's completely out of the way. But it just reminded me of, you know, when you and Ian used to do the freaking wrestling stuff, and you just slap him across the chest. That's what it just reminded me of. It just reminded me of, like, you meeting Ian just like, I was absolutely cracking up, because that's what I thought of.
It's called a pull off.
Woo! Woo!
You gotta admit, it's really fucking ropey.
I thought I read somewhere that those two absolutely hated each other, or maybe I heard somewhere, and that he actually did some damage to the guy. If I got that wrong,
really?
Only if the air like burnt his face,
really?
Something like it didn't touch him.
But I was gonna say, with that scene, it turns out they actually shot it from the wrong angle, so they weren't meant to use that in the final bit, which is why it looks so bad. It was that particular shot specifically was meant to be from the front, so it looked like there was a connection. But
they couldn't have done it again.
Well, you said that, but exactly, you know how we like it, Ben.
Yes, a perfect movie with one tiny flaw we just pick at all night.
To impossible standards.
That was. I don't know how. I really don't know what movie it was that started that, but me and Anton, we would watch the movie in the cinema, and we came back to Drayton Street, and Ian's there, Lenka's there, fucking Layla definitely wasn't there, because I banned her from the house that long. And maybe the other one, what was her name?
Nadia? Nadia.
No, God no, she never came over.
Rebecca.
Rebecca, yeah. Rebecca. The one who international bailiffs. Yeah. Yeah.
Bounty hunters. You said bounty hunters.
You're like, what do you mean international bailiffs? Like, bailiffs are UK. What?
Bounty hunters. I don't want to change anything about our uni experience. Not a thing. Well, we're not drinking with them again.
I definitely got with the wrong sister.
You did.
Because they both wanted me as well.
Yeah, you did. Absolutely did. But back to the story.
I remember when Ian sold me out completely, because she was like, Ian, I need you to tell me how to get Ben. And he was like, right, okay, just sit down for a sec. So I would suggest you go and whisper in his ear. And she did.
Yep.
She wanted advice. I gave her advice.
You
gave her the keys to the magical kingdom.
Absolutely.
You said, I expect any of you to do the same for me.
God, do you imagine when if I ever meet her again, you're like, Ben, you know what to do.
Remember, you're training.
You got me back alive. It's an ugly planet. A bug planet. Ian.
Oh, how have we not done that film yet?
Ian.
Yeah.
Zegama Beach. Zegama
Beach. How have we not done?
Have we not done Starship Troopers?
Yeah, Starship Troopers is we've got to be done. It's got to be done.
It's got to be done. Zegama Beach. Again, this is like really random.
Johnny Rico.
At least I got to have you.
Don't worry.
I don't know where it was. I think it was like we were playing a lads weekend, and someone said, where should we go? And he just turned to me. He was like, Zigama Beach.
The Outer Rings.
No never, I tell you what, I've never been so angry than when we were playing Codenames and it's Ian and Lauren on my team and Anton's Codemaster on the other team.
Mm.
And I literally see space, bug, I remember
that one, yeah,
alien, like, was and like something trooper, else, right? Like and I said, and Ian was like, I know it. And Lauren fucking talked him out of it.
Yeah, exactly. He always got every single one.
It was like, he looked at it, he's like fucking Rain Man. He looked at it, he's like, I know exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't know what we were up to. I'm so fucking lost with.
So, it's, but you still need to tell the. Yeah.
Right, so, me and Anton are big fans of Frasier, and there's this key scene in Frasier that just sums up how good the whole series is, and we just adapted it to movies, and we came home from the cinema. And Ian's there, Lenka's there, Lenka being a girl from across the road who always hung out with us, and Rebecca as well. And we just, like, as soon as we walked in, they said, so how was the movie? And we just looked at each other, and we just instinctively knew. We haven't talked about the show in years, but we instinctively knew what we were going to do. Yeah. And I just, like, very casually went to the kitchen, which is part of the, you know, it was adjacent to the living room. And Anton was like, oh, it was great. Movie was damn near perfect. And I just said, but Anton, what is better than a perfect movie? And Anton was like, well, Ben, this is what I'm pouring my, literally pouring two Rabinas, going to the tap, and pouring from the faucet. He goes, what's better than a perfect movie? It's a near perfect movie with that one tiny flaw that we can pick at all night. And I passed him his drink and I said, absolutely, to impossible standards.
Ting! Absolutely incredible.
The thing is, though, that I think Ian or someone was like, "How did you couldn't have rehearsed that? How did you know we were going to ask you?" It's like, just new.
No, just new. It's just a thing.
remember when I came back from that? It was a liaison, and you were still up at like 5-6 a.m. I walked in, you're like, "How's it going?" I was like, "Anton, it was such a success. We talked about it."
We danced.
And then you just went, we drank champagne!
I fucking love that.
It was a million to one shot that you would know where that was from. But absolutely, right now, of course. It's Anton.
Of course.
And then for the rest of the week, we kept playing, was it Charlie Fox? You know, da-da-da.
I played that for like a month. That tune is amazing. I need to get that song back.
Yeah. Anyway. So, Godfather, huh?
Godfather. Hey, that's what this podcast is about, man.
Yeah, Carlo's fucking idiot. Like, why did he marry into the mob? He's clearly knows he's violent towards women.
I didn't understand. Like, I didn't. And again, I think it was the perfect sell for what eventually obviously happened to Sonny. But I was just like, this guy's a fuck. Like, he told me, like, if you touch my sister again, I'll kill you. Like, what did you expect?
Sure, like, this film tears the Corleone family apart.
It does?
I would literally do epic rap battles between the Starks and the Corleones.
That's brilliant. That's actually, yeah, that's a great one, actually.
You know that meme that was out at the time with the start? It was a picture of all 8 of them. Fucking hell. Because there was the two little boys, and then there was Rob and...
Do you mean Stark?
Starks. Right. Yeah. Right. So there's a picture of all of them in a grid, and it was a Taylor Swift song, and it said, we are never, ever, ever getting back together.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah, Sonny shouldn't have been in charge of anything, clearly.
I just like, it, for me, though, like, even, and it used to annoy me, whenever Carlo did anything to Connie, and Sonny, perfect someone, like, well, like, Daddy never used to talk business at the table. And then Carlo was like, shut your mouth or something like that. And he was just like, hey, like, he obviously said something, he's like, don't ever speak to my sister like that again. And then freaking Connie's mum, so obviously, like, Vito Corleone's wife, is just like, hey, Sonny, don't interfere. Oh, what the fuck you mean, don't interfere? Yeah. He's abusing your daughter, for fuck's sake. What do you mean, don't interfere? Slap him. And then, obviously, because of that, Sonny then, as he does what he does best, he takes the words that other people use. He starts talking. He's like, hey, we don't discuss business at the table.
It's true.
It's just so annoying. She, in my opinion, she fested that because there was a time before that, like earlier on in the film, where they say something again. Sonny does something and she's just like, yeah, come on, what? You're just going to allow the abuse.
The actress is so fucking annoying. She's annoying in everything she's in.
Really?
What, the mother?
No, sorry, the sister.
Oh, you mean Connie? Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, but she does it in such a good way. Like, I like that she annoys me.
It's kind of what it's kind of what she's there for, Talia Shire. Like, it's kind of what she's. She just does that role well.
Like, I never thought I'd be like rooting for Jack Torrance in The Shining with the axe. But yeah, the elephant in the Corleone room really is that Michael's the favourite. You know, and
seemingly so.
Well, yep. Vito never wanted him tied up in the family business because he wanted to save him for a political career.
Did he actually want to keep him completely out of it? I thought,
100%. Absolutely. 100%.
I thought Michael escaped by joining the military.
No, 100%. The whole point is, if he's not even the favorite, he's definitely seen as the shining like star of the family because he's not part of what the family do. Which is why, like, even when they're going to take a picture at the beginning and they're taking a family picture, where's Michael? We don't take the picture without Michael. It's like, straight away, that tells you that it's like, okay, cool. Whoever this Michael is, he's important as fuck. So
Vito was incredibly careful with how he kept Michael at bay. And the military service would just add to the layers of what would eventually hopefully become a political...
I swear Michael went rogue with that. I swear it was his choice and he stayed.
No, absolutely not. He said, at one point, he even goes... I mean, look, again, to jump ahead, but to answer this particular question, he's like, I didn't want this for you. I hoped you'd be the one pulling the strings. Do you know what I mean? Like, of course, that's what he wanted. He wanted him. He wanted, like, it was almost like the final hurrah to save the family in a legitimate way.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
And that all changed, really, when he met Apollonia.
Yeah.
True. Well, I'd argue it changed before that. I mean, was he ever going to be able to get out with the family?
What I mean is, his marriage to her, I'm suggesting, is when he embraces the side of his family that he tried to deny. Not after her death, right? That deeply religious and intense wedding was a sure sign of Michael in a religious rites kind of way being reborn as like a full-blooded Sicilian.
I like, for me, like 100%. That whole, you genuinely see, and I remember kind of making note of this or talking about this, I haven't put full notes, but I remember making a note that I was going to mention this, where it's like, you literally see the evolution of Michael into the Godfather, right? From normal outside civilian to hospital, calm, collected, can make decisions, willing to stand up strong to, okay, do what? I'll kill two men in cold blood, technically, having the strength to do that, to, like you said, becoming that pure blood Sicilian. Like, out of all of the other sons, he was the one that had time in Sicily, you know? He actually went to Corleone. He was the Italian. Does that make sense? And I think it very much is that evolution as you're watching. It's just like, yeah, this guy, it's almost like this guy's going to become the perfect godfather, quote unquote, because he has everything that is required to become a godfather.
He went there with full respect and gained the respect of people that live there. You know?
Standards. I mean, like, yo, he says it straight up. And he's just like, what does he say specifically? He's like, yeah, your because something about something you could, rather than losing a daughter, what you could gain a son, your daughter could gain a husband or something like that. It's just like, yo, I'm serious. Like, this is gonna happen. It's freaking crazy.
That wedding looked like it could have happened 200 years ago.
I know.
It was that authentic.
I know, man. Yeah. I know. It's ridiculous. Like,
it was called Corleone, Italy, isn't it?
Yeah, Corleone.
Yeah. Because that place punctuates what the movie is overtly saying, right? This place is old, it's crumbling and humble. But in America, and remember, I believe in America, you get rich beyond your wildest dreams by working hard, sure, but also by committing unspeakable crimes. There is none of that in this small town in Italy until Michael brings it with him.
Yep. And even then, it's like, It's even like old school courtship. Like they don't kiss, they do interact, but it's like under supervision of all the women, and like he speaks to his father and they have meetings where they barely interact. It's just him speaking to, like, it's all traditional, you know, like it's proper Italian and Sicilian, and it's like it's proper crazy to watch that unfold and be like, what could have been if Michael stayed? But like you said, the only crime and corruption was brought with the American.
Now, yeah. I guess there's a whole book out there about how The Godfather is about the rejection of a simulation, but I can't be asked to think about that.
No.
It's at this point in the film where, like, it goes from being just one of the greats to just being something so special.
Absolutely.
I almost feel honoured watching it.
Absolutely. Like, I don't think there was any film that in that time would have done that, where, again, like I said, the whole thing about no one wanted to do mobster films anyway, but actually addressing and acknowledging the connection with Sicily and Italy and their traditions and everything, and even having it so that the majority of that time is done and spoken in Italian and translated is like, it's a big thing. Like Fabrizio and Carlo, like they absolutely cracked me up as well. But like I said, you broke my heart, Fabrizio. Seriously. Yeah. But even that scene where they're talking and like they're explaining to Apollonia's dad, before obviously they know it's Apollonia's dad, it's all right now, agora, and then like literally everything that Fabrizio says Carlo just repeats, and it's freaking hilarious. And then he just at one point when Michael's like, no, go back to talk to the dad, and Fabrizio's like, shit, we're not ready to get out of here, and he's like, go back, he's like, he takes a shotgun in with him, and he's like, right, I'm going. it's absolutely brilliant, and then he turns out to be a fucking prick.
There was no comeuppance, yeah. Was there? There's no, you don't.
That see mate, yeah, Fabrizio, you need, yeah, mate. Absolutely, he's got to go. He's got to leave. He's got to get the hell out.
Should we do the next part?
Yes, but I just want to give him one award for this bit as well. It's the Magic Mike Award. Because fuck me, he did not waste any time, did he? Jesus Christ, he leaves one country and he's just like, fuck it, Kay's gone, I'm getting married, Apollonia's hotter anyway. Fucking hell.
Did Kay ever know about Apollonia?
She didn't have a fucking clue. She didn't know where Mike was.
Yeah,
this is where like you realise that Tom Hagen would make the perfect wingman.
But yeah, pretty much.
He's throwing her off the scent like left, right.
Absolutely. If I take that letter, then it's then they can prove in a court of law that I know where Michael is. And yeah, absolutely not. He's a great lawyer.
There's one bit we haven't really mentioned that I definitely wanted to go into was Sonny's death. That's absolutely like,
oh shit! Is that
I was, yeah.
Oh shit! Of course, yeah. That is the story. We thought this.
So him getting pissed off and chasing after it is like, you know, fine, but. I was contemplating, the thing is that the scene needed it, but I very nearly threw a bullets card out for the amount of bullets this guy fucking had.
Mate, I was absolutely. Mate, you know the
Michael Flatley, Lord of the Dance, mate, got dropped as an award. Mate.
That's an award. Drop that award. The Lord of the Dance award. I was gonna say that the toll operator at the booth.
Yeah.
Ain't no fucking way that guy survived. Fuck off. No way that guy survived. He hit the ground trying to think he was safe. Ain't no way he's fucking done. There was two dead bodies there. Absolutely. Come on now.
I loved as well how the rage driving face that Sonny had. He played Sonny so fucking well.
He did.
Sat there just so mad the whole time, and then it's like, yeah. So
it's crazy because it is like, for me, it was the end, right? The last guy where he's like dead and he shoots him.
He shoots him.
And then he waits and then he kicks him.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck, that's personal, man. He's like,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
After being shot by what, 15 guys?
But like, after being lit the fuck up, he still kicks him in the head. Absolutely amazing.
This has also led to one of my all-time favorite memes, though, of just anything where it's been remade or redone and they do a terrible job of cutting to Marlon Brando's face when he's crying, being like, look how they massacred my boy. I absolutely
it love is that. So true. It is really true. It was really true. So. I was thinking about this. Like, 1972, obviously, when the film came out. And fair enough, it was an 18, obviously. And I was like, showing boob in 1972, would that have been like a big thing?
Yeah, well, this is why it's part of the new Hollywood regime. They were doing this shit, like sexuality was a thing now.
I was going to say.
It was very, very rare, but it happened. I mean, obviously, we know America was light years behind the rest of the world when it came to, had the Motion Picture Association of America, that subsidiary, which was called the, how can I call myself a film student? It's like the movie code. It's like the comic book code where up until a certain point, right, they were like, if you're going to show a love scene, a man and a woman could be on a bed kissing, but the one woman's foot has to be on the floor of the bedroom. This is a real legit rule. It's like, Jesus, if you're going to show the scene where they're getting intimate, no, at no point can all 4 feet be on the bed. One foot has to be on the floor.
I'm literally going to start looking for that now in every old film that I watch.
You know that the panning to the blowing drapes is like a staple of that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, they always kind of moved away from the scene. But I was going to say, like, boob in 1972 must have been like outrageous, even more so.
Yeah.
Yeah, craziness. Yeah. Oh, and the only other final thing on my part on this was the bomb that goes off in Italy that kills Apollonia. Mate, that's some practical shit. I was impressed. Like, they blew up a car.
Yeah.
They genuinely blew. I actually jumped a bit. Like, oh shit, I didn't expect that.
What was crazy with it making you jump is you knew it was coming. Like,
yeah, that's what I mean.
No, you're just like, there's a bomb. Okay, and it's still. They had to go big with it, and they.
I just expected something small, but I was like, no, they genuinely just blew up a car.
Devastated by Sonny's death and tired of war, Vito sets a meeting with the five families. He assures them that he will withdraw his opposition to their narcotics business and forgo avenging Sonny's murder. His safety guaranteed, Michael returns home to enter the family business and marry Kay. Kay gives birth to two children in the early 1950s. With his father nearing the end of his life, and Fredo not suited to lead, Michael assumes position as head of the Corleone family.
What is Kay's motivation for going back to Michael after the way he left her?
I don't know, but I'm doing another Wilfred Award here. You've been back a year. What the fuck? I was like, what?
Was that true, though?
It must have been. You've been back a year.
and he saw her by chance, or he went to go and see her?
I don't know. He obviously went to go see her, but he definitely went to track her down. But even still, it was like,
wait a year. It's not like quarantine. What are you doing?
Yeah. But I'm assuming, obviously, he had to, like, establish himself and family and dead, but even still, like,
no, you're right though. Fucking Wilfred Award the shit out of that, because he's
absolutely
he went back a whole year. Is she just so blindly in love, or does she actually enjoy being a mobster's mole? Like, it's weird because he wasn't able, like, he wasn't about the mob life when they first got together, and she can't see that changing him, or she just refuses to.
Yeah,
like, why does he even go back to her? He's no longer the guy he used to be. And they're completely incompatible now.
It's funny because my, you know, he's like, I need you, Kay. I want to have a family. And I've just like, I put my notes and I put in like inverted commas and speech marks. And he's like, I came because you're my second choice and I need my backup. my first wife is dead. She was Italian. Fine as hell. But I suppose we'll sell for you.
Is it because I'm the best?
Yeah. The best of what's left. Yeah. It's like, what the, like, And the funny thing is, and again, even in the conversation that you can tell, there's some underlining poignancy in what he's talking about, because she was like, oh, I'm part of my father's business and part of the kind of the business now. And he fully believes he's like obviously almost he's part of the business now. Not that he's doing good, but, you know, like, he's fully in, right? He's in now. He's they've pulled him in. Mm-hmm. And he's like, she's like, oh, he's just like any other senator or president. It's like, oh, but sentences of presidents don't have been killed. And there's a great line where he's like, who's being naive, Kay? It's like, they're there, but it's also fucking true. It's like, what are you talking about? You honestly think these people are all freaking, like, shiny, fucking got sun shining out their ass? It's like, absolutely not. They're probably some of the most corrupt people there. And it's like, yeah, but it also does frame the whole thing about them being like, it just kind of, like I said, it just makes their whole mob life that little less insidious, if that makes sense. Because you're just comparing them to politicians. And yeah, politicians, they're fucked, but they lead us as well.
It stretches credulity, to borrow a phrase from Captain Barbossa, where she goes back to him knowing full well this is not the fucking guy that left her behind. Because we know obviously Vito never wanted him in the business, in that side of the business. And all of them, maybe Vito knew, but he still didn't want him in the business, but all of them overlooked Michael's key strength, which was his military background, right? He's a general. But by the time Kay sees him again, he is on his way to being a fucking dictator.
It's so true. But the thing is, at what point, do you put that shit on Kay, in my opinion? Because I think, and again, we're still going to get to it, because obviously, as we all know, the very, very end of the film is pretty much that final look. But,
bitch, it's called self-esteem. it's the esteem of your motherfucking self. How am I supposed to control the way you feel about you, simple bitch?
It's so true, because, like, for me, like, again, I made a joke about the Eddie Murphy Award. I'd have heard that story and been like, we had fun, Mike. Those were some good times. See you later.
Too bad I can't stay.
You're fucking stupid. Yeah, you've seen that. You know that's happened. You know what's happened. You've seen his dad get fucking shot. You've seen Sonny get massacred. All this stuff has happened. My man has disappeared. All of a sudden comes back and you still get married. Shit, that shit's on you. Fuck off.
I do think it shows, I know we're skipping ahead a bit with my comment, but you know the scene later on where she's staring at him through the door right at the end of the film, and you do, I think that's the first time I remember seeing this film where the moment when she's kind of realised, where she's like, I'm just part a pawn of this, I'm just part of the game.
Funny enough, that's the part that I was leaving, like, but since you've got there, that's my exact point. Is in it, the whole point was, this is one of the few times where at the end of, oh, like, because originally, apparently, with the book, it's very much kind of like, oh, Mike's the Don, and everything's hunky-dory, and it's all good, right? Whereas the film, they changed it and ended it with that scene of Kay looking at Michael like, oh, shit, this is the realization of what it is. But I'm like, now? Now?
How about that? Down and you, I mean,
that's the real fucking Wilfred Award. Like, two kids, 10 years later, and you're like, oh, shit.
When she's a mob boss. How about now? She's got no concept of time.
He's like, you're mob boss? Is he a mob boss? How about now? How about now? What the fuck? Fuck off, man.
Ian made a joke in Training Day where he said, what happened after that day where they interview, they're debriefing the guy, and they're like, so this is when you found, this is when you knew he was No. We went for a ride, and he made me smoke PCP. Oh, so that's when you knew something was up. No. Then we went to this guy's house who says cracked kids. Oh, right, so that was it, right? No. Because fast forward, you've got a shook under your mouth, you're in the tub, and you're like, oh, fuck me, I've been had.
It's so true. At what point do you just think, shit, this ain't right? Come on, man. And then you're surprised? Get lost.
I'm throwing out the Jake Hoyt Award.
Yes! I do it! Yes, I completely agree with that shit. Fucking hell.
And I'm giving Michael the Alonzo Harris bursary.
Exactly.
Fucking hell.
The one thing they didn't put in the film, and I think would have been a good like QTE sequence in the game if they'd done it, is you have to be the godfather and you have to shoot down Fredo from being the leader of the family. Like, must have been one of the shortest conversations ever had. It's like, Fredo, Mike was going to lead. He's like, oh, okay.
Just, you'd be forgiven for people not knowing who the fuck he was in that Las Vegas scene.
I mean, like, the thing is, it was just so obvious because Fredo was just the village idiot, and he proved he was the village idiot.
Did they know they were doing Godfather 2, which is why they gave us just a bit more insight into Fredo?
I think they must. Well, the book has sequels anyway, so I'm assuming yes, they probably would have had an idea of what was happening. And the whole at the end of the book, they move into Las Vegas, and I think they delve into Las Vegas a little bit more as well, because obviously Michael's trying to turn the family legit. But yeah, the book has sequels, so I'm probably sure they knew that.
Yeah. Okay. the only thing I had left to say was that Vito worked so hard to sincerely barter peace with the other mobs, yet the war continues anyway.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like it's one of those things where all that stuff was happening underneath it anyway, without. Just not in public, right?
Yeah, but Vito seems sincere.
Yeah, of course, Vito is sincere, and I think that's the big thing, especially in his age. And it is funny though, where like it's easy to be okay with everything when you're at the top, right? And I think that was the big thing that Tattaglia was trying to get across. Is like you've got all those people in your pocket and stuff, and it's just like, well, yeah, it's nice having peace when you're sat on the top. Pretty much, we want to make money from these drugs, and we can't because we need your assistance.
Reply.
Yeah. The other thing was, and again, this is probably harkens to my pretty risky in 1972. What would they have taken now? When he talks about drugs. And he's talking about, like, obviously keeping away from schools and stuff. And he's like, well, keep it with the dark people and the coloured. They're animals anyway. Let them lose their souls. I was like, damn. Again, considering what was going on in 1972, in the pretty risky again, right? But,
yeah. I agree.
I agree. Mm. That was it. That was pretty much, I think that was everything for me.
The only other thing to mention was maybe this preludes Vito being able to read that they're going to be betrayed. Maybe he don't know by who. But you know when his top capos asked to make their own family? I thought I wasn't expecting that in the movie. For some reason I thought you would buy in for life, but it's like they're anticipating it's all going to fall once Vito is no longer the head.
I think yeah, it sounded like there was almost more of a promise from Vito eventually that Tessio and Clemenza could eventually kind of break away, and it was more kind of from a almost like an age thing, almost a bit like a retirement thing, right? Because they owned specific territories each, Clemenza and Tessio, and they both sat under Vito. So even if they broke away and made their own families, I think it was they were less answerable to Vito, but would still be very much friends and honor him, if that makes sense. So in a way, they're not technically sitting under him, but they kind of are, really. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
probably means they get a bigger piece.
Yeah, absolutely. That they get a bigger cut, they make their own rules, etc., and stuff like that, and only answerable, quote unquote, to Vito, and even then, it's not really answerable so much as it is, remember what I did for you.
Yeah.
Do you think that would have paid off if they'd let them do that, rather than, do you think that would have stopped the betrayal, or do you think that was always going to happen?
That's a good question. Clemenza, no. As in, like, yeah, Clemenza was loyal. Was that guy was there from day one, and it was great to see him in Godfather 2 as well. Tessio, potentially, I reckon, because, like Michael says, it was a smart play. It was going to be Tessio. It was the smart play.
Yeah.
But yeah, we all know what happens after that.
we're skipping ahead a bit.
Vito reveals to Michael that it was Don Barzini who ordered the hit on Sonny and warns him that Barzini would try to kill him at the meeting organized by a traitorous Corleone capo. With Vito's support, Michael relegates Hagen to managing operations in Las Vegas, as he is not a wartime consigliere. Michael travels to Las Vegas to buy out Green's stake in the family's casinos and is dismayed to see that Fredo is more loyal to Green than his own family.
Yeah, so, you know, the whole somebody will betray me plot is quite theological. How did Vito know it was Bazzini that put the hit out on him, and that Capo would ultimately betray him? I don't think,
funny enough, I don't think that's particularly fully clear, but I think it was more one of those things where...
Because Vito, the plot demands it.
To an extent, but also because, like, Vito himself is, he just has so much wisdom in a lot of stuff, like, where even when he's, like, everything, there's loads of things, there's loads of little things that he does that he just understands, and especially when he's, like, counselling Michael, he's like, this is what's going to happen, this is how they're going to do it, because it was probably, like, the old way, and a lot of the stuff that he's experienced, and maybe, I can't remember The Godfather 2 because I haven't watched it, because I didn't want to confuse the two films, even maybe things that he's learned or experienced through his time there as well, but it was just evident that there's such a level of experience and understanding from Vito. And I think when it comes to Bazzini, it was the fact that he was so adamant as well. Because if you think about it, when Salazzo talks about the drug thing, the drug business and everything that happens, he only mentions the Tattaglia family and the Corleone family, right? I don't think he ever brought up the Bazzinis. And then he mentions then that, and then all of a sudden in the meeting, he's then talking about how, oh, if Corleone has the politicians, something, he must share them. And it's like, why are you so evident, or not evident, why are you so adamant on this whole drug thing going through? And he's the only one, whereas even the other guy, and I think it was Stracci, even the other guy was just like, I didn't want to see drugs, but if we're going to do it, that makes sense? So I think that was kind of the big thing where you could tell, like, Don Bazzini was sat at the top of everything.
It'd be something really subtle that he'd pick up on, and it happens throughout the Godfather trilogy. There's like single lines that people say where you'll see Michael's face turn or the Don, and I guarantee there's probably something in here really subtle that gives Bazzini away. But like you say, he knows the game probably better than anyone. So.
Yeah. I agree with that. But again, I'm still... In my opinion, it kind of does seem like it is very much kind of like a plot-driven thing as well.
The film, there's a reason why analysts claim that The Godfather was like the best book about politics ever written. Because you can see it with how they treat poor Tom.
Yeah.
Like, Hagen was too old school.
Yeah, exactly.
You could say that he was fucked over, but the film is about one party believing in diplomacy and the other believing in brute force. And I think the third party is combining the two.
Yeah.
Sort of patient diplomacy followed by a surprise show of strength.
I think Michael is very much the ushering in of Michael is very much an ushering in of a new age, right? Where even the way he handles, and again, sorry to go a little bit further ahead, but it works because it is that kind of, this is what we need to do. I'm pulling a play, even to the point where Michael knows when they have the talk with Tessio, Hagen, and Clemenza. Michael knows exactly what the fuck he's gonna do. Like, even fucking Vito probably knows what he's gonna do at that point. But he doesn't tell anyone because he's like, I need to keep my cards close to my chest for this to work. And also for this to work, things are going to be handled differently. So because of that, Tom, things are going to get messy, and that's not what you're good at. You're good at this. So go to Las Vegas and do that. Like, there was a part in, I think it was Mo Green or Fredo. Fredo said something to Tom, and Tom was just like, this. No, Michael speaks for the family. And so because of that, speaks for this. But it's just like, he handles it perfectly. And I was like, that's where Tom's good. That's why Tom should be in Las Vegas.
I feel bad for Tom.
He's one of my favorite characters. If not, probably my favorite character.
I'd like to think it's Michael somewhat protecting him, not so much. I don't like the description here that he's relegated to Las Vegas. I think it's more like you're better, like just like Fredo. It's like you shouldn't be here. You're not a wartime consigliere, as in. It's fucking dangerous. It's like,
I think it's a bit of a. There's no way it's not a bit of a regulation because he's not sat at where he's not sat at HQ, right? He's not sat at head office. Yeah. But for the most part, it is also utilizing what he does best. But it's also because he couldn't. If things get spicy, he can't handle the heat.
Yeah. Well, last time he got captured, right?
Yep.
So.
Yeah,
with the Las Vegas, fucking Fredo.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, like, yeah. The whole thing with Fredo. So, in fact, that's the part I was going to talk about as well, where it's like, he proved himself an absolute village idiot when Michael came along. And the fact, and again, you could, what I loved about that is, again, the film is still all about family. Like I said, like Dom Toretto probably should have been in it. But it is very much that whole thing about if you're there for the family's there for you. Like, aside from the balls of Michael to just be like, Mo Green, let's buy you out. And Mo Green is literally set up like everything that is in Las Vegas. Although he does make the point that at the end of the day, we bankrolled you and you are here because of the Corleone family. Yeah. But still have the balls to be like, yeah, no, we're gonna buy you out. And then the fact is that, is that why you slapped my brother around? And it's like, that's where, again, it treads that line and crosses from business to personal.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden the conversation goes back to business again, right? And it's like, you just see that flash of it being personal. And it's just like, that for me was the hint where it's like, Mo Green's fucked.
Yeah, absolutely.
That guy is fucked.
I think as well, though, just the to be able to slap a Corleone around.
Do you know what I mean? That's a big thing, you know? Like, even if it is Fredo.
That's, yeah, even if it... Exactly. And it goes to show how detached Fredo is from what kind of life he's actually living.
Yeah.
Like, he's so small time with his thinking. And it's like, you do not see the grand scheme.
He was banging cocktail machines two at a time. People couldn't get any drinks.
It's absolutely... Yeah, Fredo, so frustrating.
Oh, man, he's an idiot. He's such an idiot.
but the whole time, like, as bad as like, the... He again, is protected by the Corleone family. Everyone has been. Exactly. They just kind of accept him, if you know what I mean. So.
Exactly. Which is exactly why it's like, Mike, don't ever speak against the family again. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
The reason you're safe is because of our name.
Exactly. It's almost like, no matter how badly he does it, he's still a Corleone. So it's just like...
Such a little bitch.
Yeah, he's so annoying, but... Well, no, but it's just so annoying. Especially particularly the guy who treats him that way. Like, he doesn't recognize his own name enough. That doesn't give him his own... I can't believe when he said he gets slapped around, but...
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. In 1955, Vito dies of a heart attack while playing with Michael's son, Anthony. At Vito's funeral, Tessio asks Michael to meet with Barzini, signaling his betrayal. The meeting is set for the same day as the baptism of Connie's baby. While Michael stands at the altar as the child's godfather, Corleone hitmen murder the dons of the five families, plus Green, and Tessio is executed for his treachery. Michael extracts Carlo's confession to playing a part in Sonny's murder. He assures Carlo that he is being exiled, not murdered, before Clemenza strangles Carlo. Connie confronts Michael about his involvement in Carlo's death while Kay is in the room. Kay asks Michael if he's telling the truth and is relieved when he denies carrying out the death. She leaves. Capos enter the office and pay reference to Michael as Don Corleone.
The Corleones look like they're so fucked in New York that they want to move to Vegas, yet they're able to kill off every single rival, including Mo Green in Vegas. Like, how? And just by killing the Dons doesn't mean the families are going to go away, right? Like, when Vito's shot and taken out of the picture, a vacuum will be filled.
I saw it as, like, wiping the slate clean. Like, it was the next generation. They got rid of all the old leaders, including Vito. It was now a new world, and that was just them. It definitely, I presume, doesn't make any sort of peace or any stability. But, you know...
I think it's just one of the things where it's like, if one Don was killed, fair enough. If two Dons were killed, oh my God. Three Dons are killed, you're like, what the fuck's happening? Four Dons are killed, fuck. And that's the whole thing where it's like, if one Don is ballsy enough, and he's not even, and he's like a new Don as well, he's like, I'm here, fuck you all, I'm done, we're not playing around, this is what happens if you fuck with my family. And all the other four heads are... I'm telling you right now, no other Don to step up is going to be like, we're going to touch fucking Michael Corleone. Fuck no. If he can take out four family heads, yeah, and
how did he do it?
And stuff like that. But
they were looking the most vulnerable the whole way through.
Yeah, yeah, they were. But that was because of the what's the word I'm looking for? Not plastic, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the kind of the calmness, for lack of a better word, of Vito Corleone, and the fact that he didn't want a war, whereas Michael's like, no, I'll fuck you up. We have I don't think you realize who we are. We actually have the resources to do it. It's because we choose not to. Sonny was stupid. He was just angry and would go and fucking deal with shit by himself. Idiot. Mike's like, I'm not even gonna be involved in this. I'm gonna sit here and there was nothing even better than Mike exactly that. And there's nothing even better than Mike being like, as people are getting killed, my man is renouncing Satan in church. Yeah. It's like, that was fucking brilliant.
I think the word you were looking for was platitudes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. And Vito is just he's like, I'm tired, I'm old, let's just chill. Some of the Michael's like, I ain't got fucking time for this. You fuck with me, you die.
Yeah.
We've joked throughout this recording about Kay and how long it took her to find out about what Michael was really up to. But you know when he says, okay, you can ask me this one time, and she says, is it true? Did you do it? No, it's not. How long did he think he could keep that charade up? She finds out seconds later. It's like, it's literally, oh, thank God I dodged that bullet for a while. She's like, oh, hey Don, how are you doing? He's like, oh, fuck. Gambit literally lasted seconds. I bought myself seconds.
I think it's gaslighting. It's like, don't ask me about my business. Done. And then it's like, because all he's done is he's changed the frame. In that situation, he's the one on the back foot, right? His sister's come in. Then Casey and his sister come in. She brings out all a look at the papers and it's just like, oh shit, he's on the back foot. He stops the situation where it's just like, no one talk. Okay, now I'm going to let you talk. And it's the one time you can fucking do it. Oh, and guess what? It wasn't me. It's like, it's complete. It's stopping it, taking control, and then setting the scenario.
I'm surprised that he didn't just like smile at her cheekily as the door closed. Yeah, after she is it. You know, when Grayson was crying, I really wanted to say to you both, he's hysterical. It's such a good way of like, she's hysterical. It's like, yeah. Dude, get her out here.
Yeah.
The way Michael's character changes in this film, we've said it before, is a thing of pure beauty.
Oh, Al Pacino
and his performance is amazing. It's unbelievable. Everything that happens to him, the hardness, you know, what hardens him until he's unrecognizable by the end is all Pacino.
And like I said, in a weird way, one of the how do I put this? One of the negative positives of this film is you're just like, yeah, like. My man is out here killing people, and you're just like, yeah, fuck those families, fuck the Talia, fuck Strachey, and you're just like, no,
fuck him.
Exactly. You are literally out there just in like, yeah, fucking, we're handling business. Like, and that is the point thing. We're saying like, we're handling business, almost like you're part of the family as well. We're handling business. And it's like, well, yeah, but at church with clean fingers. Do you renounce Satan? Yes. Do you renounce evil? Yes. It's like, what he's just out there. Like, this is the influence this guy has.
But this film, that's why this film is a tragedy.
Exactly.
It's the tragedy of Michael. He was desperate to avoid his destiny, right? He was the prince that did not want to be king. And he starts the film in his army uniform, and he wants to be a true American, and he's somewhat assimilated to American culture. He does not want the Sicilian way of life. Particularly his family's ties to organized crime. And it's tragedy because he falls right into the pit. He is Lazarus, resurrected, rising from the ashes, and he is completely and totally the Godfather and more cunning and cutthroat than Don Vito could have imagined.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He isn't just a godfather. He's the godfather. That's why the film technically is about him. It's freaking crazy. I mean, like, even, like, when he's talking to Carlo, he's like, you think I met my sister a widow? My man is happy to lie to your face because why the make him a fucking widow.
Why the ruse? Just kill him.
No, because that entire point, like, he wants, and that is far more powerful, where it's like, I know
he's toying with him.
Absolutely, I know you did it, but I'm going to make you admit to me that you did it. And again, in a weird way, it's almost that bit of like justification as well, where it's just like, oh, now I'm definitely justified in what I was going
to
do. Because
but just pump him after he admits it. Why take him to the car?
Oh, because guess that we're going to take it to the cup. That's because that's how we kill people in the mafia. We don't get our suit day. Someone else gets the suit day.
It seemed like he was toying with him.
It's absolutely crazy. It's just, it's nuts.
I never did catch what Tessio was up to the whole time, why he ultimately turned on Michael.
So it's basically, he'd gone to, but like you said, he was the Corleone capo that was that Vito warned about, that he's going to bring him like a treacherous. So in essence, Tessio was, if they had that meeting and Michael was killed, then obviously it would be a case of Tessio, there'd be a vacuum, and Tessio would get his own family, probably under Barzini or through the vacuum of Michael. So not like he was going to become the head of the Corleone family by any means, but that space would have allowed him to keep his territory and more than likely increase it under Barzini as well, who was obviously the main bankroller or like mastermind behind that particular initial meeting. So that was the point. Like you said, it was the smart play because they thought the Corleone family was weak, and Michael was like, "We're not fucking weak. We've just been sat there. Now we'll show you who the fuck we are."
Turns out Clemenza was the most loyal after all.
Mate, I didn't doubt Clemenza for a second. Yeah. I mean, if I'm coming from the beginning.
Shaming was cut out of the second film.
Yeah, it really was.
I think he had an argument with Paramount or something.
Really?
I heard
Wasn't it something like, when you said like he was too expensive or something to actually put in the second film?
He was one of our. He was either the highest or one of the highest paid.
That is what it was about, though. That was the pulling out.
It was pay. I think the other thing that was great was when Tessio, like, you know, when he's speaking to Tom and he's like, it messes with all my plans kind of thing, or like settings or my whatever it is, and then they turn, he's like, actually, I'm not going with you, Sal. And he walks back, and then the other guys come in, and then they stop him from taking his gun, and it's just like he gives Tom. And Tom gives him that look back. And it's like, imagine looking at someone that you know is dead.
Yeah.
Like, what is that like? What is that like? Just knowing you're not going to see this guy again. It's fucking crazy. And it's like, even Tessio was like, can you do anything for me? For old time's sake.
Yeah. Because he's like, for reals? Tell Michael it was, again, it's just business.
It's a business. It's like, and again, that cements that.
It's the next move.
It does cement everything, because it is just that, oh, it's all business. No, it's not. It's fucking killing people. I still don't understand, in my opinion, as to why Connie's so fucking upset. It makes no fucking sense to me.
She's gaslit as well.
It makes no fucking sense to me at all why she's upset. I mean, yes, her husband's dead, right? Cool.
And her kids are bastards, though.
Yeah, but this is also the same husband who...
No, that doesn't make sense. Bastards are if you... Yeah, well, yeah, no, bastards are if it's unmarried. The kids are fatherless, basically.
Yeah, but even still, it's like, you're part of the Corleone family, so there's no way you're not taken care of, right? And it's like, you didn't even think about me. What do you mean think about you? The guy beat you with the new entry of life whilst you were fucking pregnant, then had your brother killed. Why the fuck are we thinking about Carlo? I'm surprised you didn't pop him yourself.
Seriously.
It's fucking stupid.
Just had rose-tinted glasses for Carlo. She's
a fucking idiot.
I mean, they even tried. He was in on the meetings with them when they was discussing the family business and scenes earlier with the Don.
Like you said,
and the amount of time they took with him as well. It's just...
It's a fucking joke.
Yeah.
Should we roll on to the scores? All right, well, the final scores are upon us, and we each individually give this movie a score out of 10, and when you combine our three individual scores, we get a final score out of 30, an overall score out of 30, I should say, and we then use our superior mass jiu-jitsu to work out where in our top 10 list the movie will go, if it reaches the top 10 at all. Don't think this one will. If this is your first time listening, each of us have three penalizing cards we can throw out per review, and these are named bollocks cards, reserved for points in the movie where you might find it just too egregious to let pass without being marked down for. These bollocks cards are totaled up and deducted from the final score. And in this review, only one bollocks card was thrown, and that was by myself. So we'll keep that in mind. Who wants to go first?
Absolutely loved watching this film. Again, it's a film I don't think I can get bored of every time I watched it.
Sound like you're crying.
It's been great. I am
tears of joy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's thinking back to when I first watched it, and I thought I'd watch the whole trilogy just in different parts. Kind of makes more sense now that I've sat and I've watched this, trying to like have a more analytical eye rather than just mindlessly watching it. And I think the reason that, I broke it down into those three films is actually Michael's journey. And that's what makes sense to me now, as you see Michael's leaps and bounds through those, you know, those three acts, at least in my head, his development, the tension that they're able to create in the film is just amazing. They completely understand how to use the camera and the sound, especially, to really set the scene and make you kind of feel like you're feeling exactly what Michael is feeling. They make you care about a family very quickly as well. And I mean, they don't do it. They're mafia. They definitely make their money through like some dodgy means. But right from the start, you kind of are welcomed into that family and you kind of care. They did an absolutely amazing job of that. And I think that's why I think the film is so important. They didn't have to show you a lot of violent scenes. You just knew that was part of the business. Watching the Don delegate all of these things that need to be done or whatever they agree, a lot of it is just talk, but they go away and get it done. And just like the Dons do, you just expect it to happen. So I think it makes you feel the power that the Dons feel throughout the film. And also, journey of the characters, really. But I absolutely love this film. Could watch it over and over and over. I'm going to be giving it a 9.5.
Ian is yet to give a 10.
The fact that this was on the same level as 300 is a big deal.
It's monumental.
Oh my God almighty.
Do you realise what you've done, Ian? You've rated Godfather on the same level as 300. Or, sorry, strike that, reverse it.
No, wait, what? Mick, no. Can I lower my score to 9?
No, you fucking can't.
No, honestly, I probably enjoy this film as much as I enjoy 300, putting it out there.
For Ian, it's all about rewatchability, 100%.
Yeah.
Okay. Part of it. Well, I'll go next. This film is clearly a new Hollywood masterpiece. It is also one of the best films out there that combine and... what's the word I'm looking for? It combines and aligns its themes with the actual plot without hitting us over the head with it, which is extremely hard to do. It makes it look easy. Themes are so clear. It's a film about American exceptionalism, the American dream, simulation, the importance of culture, tradition, but most importantly, it's a film about family, as Ian just said, and it gets it right. 100% it does. These guys put family first. They work hard, they make a fortune, they live a rich life. If that's not the American dream, I don't know what is. So, you know, the theme is incredible. There's an argument that the film is just a glorifier of gratuitous gang violence. Now, when I was a kid, I thought films were cool by virtue of their violence. And the violence in The Godfather is part of the reason. It has its detractors. But in this film, I don't think I ever really cared to note that the reason for the violence is because you can't tell an authentic story of this level without it. So it's the same with war movies. You know, they're not glorifying it. It's being a realist. And in fact, there are far more sinister and unnerving acts of indirect violence and bloodshed in corporate America than shown here. Just watch the fucking movie Dark Water. You know, that will tell you everything. So the violence doesn't offend me, and I don't think it's making a cliche out of Italian mob violence either, although I know like people who are of a certain age will think it is. It's a beautiful evolution of the tragic hero character, one that I can't imagine there are that many better in the history of cinema. Michael becoming everything he once feared he would be is just fucking gut-wrenching. The movie tears the Corleone family apart, as I've said, in such wicked and yet realistic ways as well. Like, each character is ripped away from the family the way they... some of them the way they probably deserve to be, and some not. But, yeah, those are all the things that I think make the film a masterpiece. But I defer to the Honourable Peter Griffin for one of my drawbacks. It insists upon itself. They spend a lot of time setting up that which could have been tighter. Did we need the Las Vegas plot? You know, unless it was just to get up Frodo for Godfather 2, no spoilers, I don't care. Look, I love Masters of the for the Universe, so I can't really I can't really say anything. I think it could have been shorter, is what I'm saying. It could have been shorter, and that's it. That's the only negative. And the only other criticism, which sounds ridiculous after all the lavish praise about how authentic the film is, but I take exception, and I have to think about this carefully, I take exception to the way gender roles are defined in this film. So this may very well be or have been what households are like in Sicilian culture, but the movie doesn't need to be so cavalier in its underdevelopment of these female characters. Like, Kay doesn't really get an arc, and if she does, it's paper thin. Like, Connie's just a mess. Apollonia, I mean, I'll give her a pass because she is traditional and submissive by virtue of growing up in the old world. But otherwise, nah, not feeling it. Not even Mrs. Don, hardly a peep. I'm not against showing the reality of the lives of women in this criminal world, but that didn't need to come at the expense of them as living, breathing characters. It sounds harsher than I mean it to be, but that's just my opinion. So overall, I'm going to give this film, for all of its positives and very few negatives, a 9.
Nice. Strong.
Yeah. Good score.
Cool. I'll go next. It's 10. Done.
All right. See you next week.
Mate, plain and simple. This movie's a 10. Like, I literally could not... 10 a movie anymore. I remember thinking this is probably going to get a 10, watching it and thinking there's no way this is going to get a 10, and then I was like 5 minutes in and was like, this movie's a 10. it's very rare that you have a movie change and still impact the way that movies are shot, memes are created, scenes are done, lines are retold. Like, it's almost like a foundation that film is now built upon. And I can imagine this, The Godfather, was to Italians what Black Panther was to Black people, what other, like, just, it's just unbelievable in terms of what it was. And again, I say that because it does glorify, if you will, quote unquote, the mafia life and lifestyle to an extent, but was more an opener of it because, like you said, there is tragedy in it and it shows the reality of what is experienced, and was probably one of the first few films to openly play and highlight the nuances of what is deemed to be good. Is it a good thing that Michael has taken out all his enemies because it protects his family that we see as good? But then what about all the other families that are now destroyed as a result of what's happened? And would that have happened if they had gone in his family anyway? But then how did Vito himself actually get to the point where he was? He must have done some of it. And it's just so well done, and just... there's no way you don't watch that thinking, what's next? You see that door close and you think, shit, what's next? There has to be something next. And it can't be understated, like you said, as to the impact that this film had in terms of even Hollywood and studios. And when you have people like George Lucas even having their own finger in it, and we didn't even know that, it's like this film has so much around it that's not even included in the film. So, yeah, it was going to be a 10 from the beginning, and it just refortified that for me, and it's absolutely a 10.
Are you sure you don't want to give it a 9.5?
I'd give it an 11 if I could.
Well, that is Anton's first 10 out of 10 of the entire run of the show.
Yep.
The only other person to have given a 10 is moi. Mm-hmm. And I gave it twice. One to The Departed and one to Brick.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Good films.
Fuck you. You gave Brick a 7.
Yeah.
Or 7.5 even.
Yeah, it's a good film. 7.5 ain't bad, is it?
Okay, so that is 28.5, but you got a minus one bollocks card by me, which takes it down to 27.5 out of 30. Now, as we're closing out the series, let's go through our top 10, shall we say. We have joint sixth place, which is Training Day and Ghostbusters. They both got 22.5 out of 30. And then we have joint fifth place, which is Snatch and Serenity. They both got 23 out of 30. And then we go into fourth place with Hot Fuzz, 24.5 out of 30. Third place is still 300 with 25 nice. Out of 30.
Wow.
And then you get, well, it gets a bit
messy.
But you've got Brick, Dark Knight, and The Departed all on 26 out of 30.
What? Really?
Yeah. 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 It's crowded.
Yeah.
And then we get to who is in second place. In second place,
drum roll,
is now Fight Club with 27 out of 30, meaning that we have a new winner with 27.5 out of 30. Wow. It is our number one ranked film, The Godfather.
Yep. Has to be. Has to be. Completely agree with that.
Happy with that.
Right. It has to be.
It's a great film.
I can't wait to fucking knock it off its perch.
It insists upon itself.
It does. No, it's a great film. I gave it a 9. What more can I say?
It wasn't perfect. Can't wait to watch the rest of them now.
So, it's about that time that we got to make like Marlon and Brango. But before we do...
Oh, no. Wow. Nice.
Please, a little bit of professionalism. Okay. Yeah, but before we do that, we are going to look into the future, the near future, into a crystal ball, and pick the first movie of Series 3 of Back to the Pictures. We pick a movie using a click and reveal method, and we have a bunch of MP3 files to do that. They're all labeled from 1 to 40. Each file is a movie clip that reveals what our next movie is going to be. And we find out at the same time as the listening audience what the movie is going to be. Cut there, because we know it's Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, shit. Jesus. Fucking hell.
Do you not remember? We said it was.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think it's fine. So. It's just one hell of a film to come back from. Godfather to Shawshank. Wow. Oh, I thought you was doing Shawshank.
I don't even know what that... I don't even know that
Yeah, one. I don't even know what... Does that even have music?
It does, but it's very iconic. When you hear it, you'll know. It's very hard to actually hum. So, yeah, we are going to pick episode 1 of season 3 right here and now. I'm going to ask one of my co-hosts, Ian, can you pick a number from 1 through 40, please?
36.
Does that include me?
What?
Look, you're 37.
I'm 37?!
Right. 37. My girlfriend just sucked 37 dicks. In a row? Hey, try not to suck any dick on the way to the parking lot. Okay, 36, one sec.
Get busy living, or get busy dying.
Oh, I mean, is that serendipity, or you're going to find a film as prestigious as The Godfather to kick off season 3?
Back to back.
I believe in The Godfather.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but the cards have fallen where they may.
I'd like to say it's going to stay number one. I'd like to.
Oh, that is brutal.
Hey, no. Shawshank is a big ass film. So, like,
this is real life.
Watch it as it is.
Podcast ratings don't happen though.
Wow. That's brilliant.
I once saw a top rated film when I was a kid. Now they're everywhere.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Brooks was awesome. Here. Ben was too. Yeah, so it's no secret, based on what you just heard, the film that we will open series three with. We haven't got a date yet, but don't worry, it's coming to a podcast host near you, is The Shawshank Redemption. It's a 1994, I'm sure, correct me if I'm wrong, 1994 film, and it stars a whole host of famous people, and is, if The Godfather, like, is, we do a lot of, like, guy favorite films on this podcast, like Fight Club is a very guy, a pro dude film. The Departed is very, is a very lad orientated film, and The Godfather is. So, you know, this Shawshank Redemption is like one of those films that men don't mind admitting they've cried over.
Mm.
But it's also one of those films that women also really enjoy as well. So I'm excited about it. I'm excited. I know Lauren will be excited to watch it.
Yeah. I haven't watched it in a while, you know.
Uh-huh. So, that just leaves me for this season. Thank you so much for joining us as we've blast through another 10 films in 11 episodes. It's going from strength to strength. Please keep those subscribe buttons at the ready. Those reviews, the likes, the downloads. We're doing really well. We want to do better. And we will see you for series three. I just need to thank my co-hosts. And let's start with Anton.
I don't like violence, Tom. I'm a businessman. Blood is a big expense.
Thank you. And Ian.
Never let anyone know what you're thinking.
And that goes double for Ian.
I was going to say. I was like, was that a quote? Was it my head? I just had thinking like...
So sorry.
Was that a quote? Or was he just thinking shit?
What was that, an mantra?
Do you know what I mean?
And for the last time this season, remember, folks, your futures haven't been written yet. No one's has. Your next picture is whatever you make it. So make it a good one.